Rainmaker FM is brought to you by Digital Commerce Institute. Do you want to build the business of your dreams without squandering time and money, stumbling around to find the right path, or making unnecessary mistakes? The market is ready and waiting for you, but that doesn't mean it's gotten any easier. Digital Commerce Institute is here to change that. Go to rainmaker.fm/digital-commerce and get the training, education, and community you need to start building your digital business the right way. That's rainmaker.fm/digital-commerce.
On this episode of Technology Translated, we're joined by Joanna Wiebe from Copy Hackers to talk about A/B split testing, optimizing your website, and some other things you should be thinking about to build your online business. Hey guys, welcome to Technology Translated, and today we have Joanna Wiebe from Copy Hackers with us to talk a little bit about A/B split testing. Joanna, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. Very excited to talk about this topic because as a podcast for non-techies and talking about technical things, this is one that I run into frequently with my clients, and that is A/B split testing. And it's either something that they're not doing because they're a little intimidated by how to go about it, or they're not doing very well. So I thought it would be nice to have you on. I know this is something that you are very familiar with and you've talked about quite a bit in the past. So let's first of all just queue up for people who may not be as familiar with what exactly A/B split testing is.
Sure, absolutely. A/B split testing or split testing or A/B testing, lots of different names for this. It's a way to serve up when we're writing copy or designing pages, whatever it might be that we're trying to do to move people to act. We're often taking a stab at it, right? Like a kind of shot in the dark. It might be a really informed shot in the dark, and it might be like really close to the target, but you're still in a lot of ways guessing, right? Like, will this work for our audience? Does this speak to what our audience cares about most? A/B testing helps us solve that and take away a lot of the guesswork by saying, okay, well, you might guess at what you're going to put out there for an audience. But you can put more than one thing out there for that audience and see which performs better. So what happens with A/B split testing, in the case of A/B testing, A and B are like variation A, which is one form of, like, let's say a homepage. If you wanted to make your homepage perform better, you'd have the variation that is currently on your site, like currently there, it's your homepage today, that's A. We'd call that just A. We'd assign it the letter A. We'd also call it the control, but just for the purposes of keeping things nice and simple, today we'll just call it A. And then the new homepage that you'd like to see if it performs better than the variation A, we call that B, right? So now we come up with A, that's our control. B is the new variation that might be, if it's again your homepage, it could be leading with a very different headline and it might have different calls to action on it. It might have a video on it that the variation A does not have on it. You're really just taking a lot of ideas that your team has, ideally based on research and a lot of stuff that you've done to get to the point of creating a new variation. You're putting that out there to 50% of the traffic to your homepage. So 50% will see A, the other 50% will see B. The tool that you use to deliver the A/B test is going to split your traffic randomly and make sure that the right number of people are seeing each variation. And so because the tool does all of this, all you have to do is create a new variation, use the tool, and then all the traffic that drives to your homepage will be split up. And by the time you have a certain number of conversions, and you generally have to have a decent amount of traffic to make this work, but the end result is you see, after let's say a 4-week period, you see if variation B outperformed variation A or if A outperformed B. And then you can either make a decision based on that or do more tests. In best cases, you'll just keep testing and optimizing to keep increasing your conversion rate. Does that make sense?
I think that makes total sense. It certainly brings up a couple of other questions, but I think that's a great explanation of just the basics of what the A-B testing is.
Okay.
So my first question is, what are some of the common things on a website that people might look to test? Is a homepage a common thing, or are there maybe other things that are more important?
Yeah, a homepage is a common one. A homepage is the place I've found that most people want to start with everything. But that's problematic in my opinion, because a homepage is such an odd little thing. All of your traffic from all sorts of different places, people that know a lot about you, people that know nothing about you, people from all over the place are coming to your homepage. So because of that, it's hard to find the optimal message for everybody, like the best headline for everybody. Well, there isn't going to be a best headline for everybody when they're all so different coming to your homepage. So I don't recommend you start with your homepage, because homepages are just nasty beasts and we have to figure out different things about them entirely, in my opinion. But rather, if you can focus on places that are closer to, that are deeper in your funnel in a lot of cases, they might have a little less traffic, so that makes it hard. But the closer you get to the point of conversion, the more interesting I have found the things you can test are, and the more you're speaking to a certain sort of prospect, right? So somebody who's getting a bit more narrow, you can better understand who they are. Also landing pages, if you're doing like Facebook landing pages where you do Facebook ads and then you land people on a landing page for that Facebook ad, well, you know where they came from when you're creating that landing page. You know what message they saw. So you have a very controlled amount of controlled traffic coming in to that landing page, which means you can test more specifically to that audience, which is really my goal. So I'm coming at this from a copywriting angle all the time. There are other things, of course, you can test outside of copy. Like I mentioned, the presence or absence of a video, like an explainer video or a demo video. Buttons, should a button be placed in one place or another place? That might be a less valuable split test sometimes, but that is one other thing that you can test. You can test anything on a page, but I found that, and especially because I'm in copy, but I work in conversion rate optimization and copywriting is a huge part of that. And I would think a lot of CROs would agree with me that copy testing is really low-hanging fruit. It's really easy to do. You rarely require a designer to do it. You just have to go do the research to figure out what you might need to optimize or say differently in your copy. And then you go and you just make that change, especially like I talked about testing tools. And so a lot of testing tools like Optimizely or VWO, you can just go into their editor, make a new variation of the page you want to test. Again, if it's a landing page for a Facebook ad, make a new variation of that landing page in Optimizely just by duplicating it right there in the tool. Just click button and then it duplicates it. And then you rewrite, let's say, the headline and the call to action copy, maybe your bullet list in the hero section. So those sorts of things are very easy to change. And they're also going to make, in a lot of cases, a really big impact if they're informed by real information about people who are coming to the page, what they want, what they're looking for, what pains they're trying to solve, and things like that. But yeah, you can test anything on there, but I do recommend that you test on narrower pages. So not your homepage.
Got it. And that's a good, very good point. And one thing I'd like to just back up for a second and explain to people is that in general, I would say your homepage is not a landing page in the context that we are talking about landing pages. I often hear people refer to the landing page on their website and clients who are maybe newer to doing something online and they're referring to their homepage. And I try to get them to make that distinction that we're not talking – that's when we say homepage, we're talking about the homepage. If we're talking about a landing page, that's a standalone page that is specifically designed to do something, to get users to take some action.
Yes.
So yes, I want everybody to be clear on that. So when we're talking about landing page, this is very different things. We're not talking about your homepage. If we mean homepage, we'll say homepage. Now, when we come to split testing landing pages, and I like the Facebook example because it is a targeted audience. You're bringing people over from one specific social channel, and that's a good opportunity to test two different pages. Is it better to test one thing at a time, maybe just change the headline and leave everything else the same? Or do you test multiple things in conjunction? And if so, how do you know what it is that's really impacting the conversion rate?
So here's how I've seen it in tests that we've conducted. And we've conducted tests with businesses that have tons of traffic and then businesses that have less traffic. And it doesn't only come down to the amount of traffic coming to a page, but that is an important factor. So when we're thinking of testing anything, we want to look at the traffic coming to the page, how many people are coming there, and what they're currently converting at. So we can get a sense for how much traffic we need to send to the page that needs to go through the test in order to get to a state of confidence with the results that we're going to get out of the test. So with that in mind, so more traffic's better, great conversion rates that we can build on are a good thing as well. It can help us finish the test before the cookie for the testing tool that you're using expires, which is usually within a 4-week period, right? So we rarely want to run a test for longer than 4 weeks. So knowing that, if 4 weeks is the cutoff, let's say as a general rule of thumb, you need to have a good amount of traffic cut in half, right? Because it's divided between two variations, and then you need one of those variations to largely outperform the other. Knowing that we want to have enough of a distance between how the two pages convert or the two variations convert, if there has to be a gap between those in order for us to get to a state of statistical confidence, then a lot of times we'd say, okay, well, then it's best to do a sort of swing for the fences test. The less traffic you have, the more you may want to do a dramatically different design. If you can only do an A-B test, you can't do A-B-C-D, you can't test multiple things. You have to really say, okay, here's A, now here's our test B. That B should usually be a swing for the fences test where it's dramatically different. And that means you're testing many things at once. You might be completely redoing a landing page, right? In this case, a Facebook landing page. And if you were just to test the headline, but you didn't have that much traffic coming to the page, you'd have a hard time moving the needle in a significant way with just a headline. In most cases, there are always going to be edge cases, but for the most part, if you only test one thing on the page, yes, you'll absolutely know, oh, it was the headline that impacted that. If you only change the headline and you get to statistical confidence that there was a lift, great. But you have to have the traffic to give you the luxury of testing one thing and knowing that that one thing was the difference. So this is the challenge that people have. But general rule of thumb, the lower your traffic, the more your page has to be dramatically different from the control or variation A. The more traffic you have, the better your conversion rate, et cetera, the better the initial stuff you're working with, the fewer elements on the page you need to change. And of course, our ideal would be just as you said, right? It's to only change one thing so that we know what the difference was. If you have to change your whole page, you don't really walk away learning anything. Hopefully, you'll have a hypothesis going into that test so you know why you made the changes on that page. Then you can say, okay, well, we've learned this, but you won't learn down to this like granular level that we so often need to optimize our businesses. So that's how we look at test one thing versus test many things.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Is there a minimum amount of traffic that you do look for before you say, okay, we know that more is better, right? Because we can get a far greater precision, but you got to get at least a certain number of views to that page or that test. Is there any kind of guideline that we can give people as sort of a minimum?
What I recommend people do and what I do is go to Evan Miller, E-V-A-N Miller, MILLER.org, and use the sample size calculator there. He's got a ton of, like, he calls them awesome A-B tools because they are. And that will help you identify how much traffic you need to your two variations in order to run a test of confidence. So you take your baseline conversion rate. So if your landing page is converting at 10%, you enter 10% into the little field that it has there. And then it asks for something called a minimum detectable effect, which is really just like the lift. Or don't get too, like, I'm not a mathy person. I did terribly in stats in university. So you don't have to like know any of that stuff to make sense of this calculator. You're really just entering your conversion rate today, what's happening on your homepage, or sorry, in this case, landing page today, And then you want to talk about what kind of lift you anticipate getting with your new variation. And you enter that in the second field. So if you think, okay, well, we're aiming for 25% lift. Now you won't know, right? But you know, the more tests you do, the more you know what you can expect to get out of a test and what sort of lift you're looking for. Hit the little button, the little radio that says relative. And then, you know, you can play around with some of the sliders below to increase your statistical significance. So we want to finish a test at 95% or above for statistical significance, right? So if we were converting at a baseline conversion rate of 10%, if that's what your Facebook page was converting at today, 10% of people that arrive there take the action you want them to take, and you're going to put a new variation against that. That variation you anticipate will create a lift of 25%. If it were to create a lift of 25% or 25% more people, so now 12.5% of people who arrive on that variation convert, so that's a 25% lift. If I'm doing the math right, again, I'm not a mathematician, but I think that's pretty simple math. And then it will tell you the sample size that you need per variation. The traffic that you need to go there is approximately 4,000 visitors per variation in the period in which you run the test. So if you're like, oh, great. Well, last week we had 10,000 visitors to this Facebook landing page. Perfect. Then you have the traffic to run an A-B test. If you get that lift, you can run an A-B test in a single week. You might want to let it run a little longer just to make sure nothing's wonky, but that would be a good thing to know. If you only get 2,000 visitors a month to that page, then you'd know, okay, well, we can't really run a test, an A-B test on this page, but unless we go for a much bigger lift, like a 50% lift, which is again why you'd want a real swing for the fences variation where you're really trying hard to just do all that it takes to convert people, not making small, modest changes, but making big changes. And if you enter that in there, you could say, okay, well, again, same control, same page. And now there's a new variation. If it can get a 50% lift, then we have the traffic because it only takes 1,000 people per variation in order to finish the test in that month-long period. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. And leads me to another question of traffic. If I don't have the traffic I need right now, does it make sense to perhaps do some sort of like a Facebook ad to drive people to that landing page? Or does that in some way potentially bias the results?
Well, as long as both variations are having traffic from a Facebook ad driven to it, which they will be if you're using a testing tool on that landing page, as long as everybody arriving on the page is seeing the same things beforehand, it should be good. Like the testing tool is controlling for a lot. Now, it's not controlling for everything because we can still see some wonkiness when we run tests, even in a, you know, seemingly perfect environment. But it should be fine. I wouldn't say run Facebook ads to a homepage to increase your traffic in that period because it's like shooting people through a funnel and then exploding them into this big open space is how I visualize like this little narrow group of Facebook ad people where you targeted based on something very specific in most cases and they saw a certain ad. And if you drive them to your homepage where other traffic that's not the same is coming in, then you could have a problem on your hands. If you drive them all to a targeted landing page, that Facebook ad group to a targeted landing page, which then is split test, then you should be okay. We do this testing all the time on Facebook landing pages. So there's little reason to believe that you should have a problem in that case. But if your traffic isn't great, and if it's going to take a ton of money to get those Facebook ads out there and get a lot of the right people to your landing page, you don't always have to A-B test. A-B testing is something that a lot of people want to do, and because tools make it really easy to do it, people kind of rush to do it, but you don't always have to do that because a lot of businesses get good results with A-B testing. As cool as it can be, it's not like the surefire thing to grow your business because a lot of times you'll only see a lift of 10%, right? Like 10% is a pretty common lift. So if you're converting at 2% on a page and now it's 2.2, that's not that fantastic, especially depending on what you're actually measuring based on. So if you're measuring conversion, not on paid conversions, but rather on like click-throughs or something like you might do with a Facebook landing page, like how many people signed up on the Facebook landing page or how many people opted in on that landing page, those aren't paid conversions then, right? So getting that lift from 2% to 2.2%, it's good. And the more traffic you have, the better that number works for you. But there are easier ways to make more money, and you don't always have to split test. It's just a really great thing to do if you can do it. If you can't, don't let it bog you down. Don't let it weigh you down. Don't like worry too much about it. Maybe down the road you'll be able to, but there are definitely other ways to do it. I say that as just a caveat on the whole idea of A/B testing. Yeah, because it can be a kind of dazzling thing when you read about like, oh, we got a 98% lift in paid conversions when we did this one simple thing. And those are like, yeah, those are blog posts that are designed to be read, right? So yeah, they're not necessarily the most common scenario.
So what I'm hearing you say is that A/B split testing is and can be a good thing. It's a tool in your arsenal, but it is not necessarily the end all be all if you are trying to maximize conversions.
Exactly. If your goal is to make more money, there are easier ways to do it than setting up an A/B test. That doesn't mean you shouldn't. If you have a really good reason to believe that a new variation you want to put out there is going to perform better, then it's often a very good time to test because you don't know, right? So rather than replacing an existing page or email or ad or whatever you want to test, rather than replacing that with a brand new variation that you don't know how it will perform, you just think it's going to be better, that's a good case in which you should test just to see, because so many times the things we think are going to work do not work. And that's a great reason to test just to be sure and to see measurably if a page or line of copy or whatever it is actually outperforms the control or not.
Okay, so that absolutely begs me to ask the question, what are some of those other things? Are there things that you would recommend? And we don't have to go too far down that because that's really a different topic, but yeah. My brain is spinning now thinking, okay, if I'm not going to dive right into A/B testing and there are other better ways, is there just maybe a couple that you can drop on us by way of example?
For me, coming at this from a copywriting perspective, as a copywriter, I have seen, you know, we're very close to results. We're right there because the words are what sells. So you are about as close as you can get to a customer when you're writing those words down. So for me, the things that I have seen perform extremely well, the thing that I would do for any business immediately, anybody that we work with, everybody immediately, the first thing we look at is their email. Because email, as much as there's all this other stuff, there's always going to be other dazzling things out there. Every business I know, when it comes down to it, makes their money by email. Period. All the time. Onboarding emails, nurturing emails, and obviously sales emails. Those are the number one place to start without question. That's entirely how most businesses that we work with and that I know that we don't work with grow. Now, that's like not exactly like a growth hack or something. It's like, oh, it's just a marketing thing. Just go do that. But honestly, if you just spent all your time optimizing your emails and then, of course, the pages that they land on, like, amazing, right? You could do so much with your business and squeeze so much more out of what you already got going on. But other things, I mean, there's really kind of fun stuff out there. Do we want to talk more about like the fun little things that are kind of dazzling?
I would love to. Yeah, let's go there.
I'm trying to think through some of the better ones. What's coming to mind are these weird little things that startups do, like cereal box stuff that's happened in the past. Anyway, it's not a big deal. One of the things that we've seen go cool places is, of course, if you can pull together some cash, obviously, to do really cool video stuff, but you never know if it's going to go very far, right? So we've talked before about, you know, Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club appeared out of nowhere after putting together like this video for some like $4,000 or $5,000, this like video that went viral. And if you think about it, there are so many tactics out there, right? And that's just one of them. But if you were to choose just one of them, you don't need a million of them, you just need to choose one. Is it email? Is it taking, you know, $10,000 and finding some creative person down at the videography part of your local college or something, someone who's like really creative and dying to do something cool. And you brainstorm some ideas and you put together a really inexpensive video that everybody watches somehow, if it's a really cool thing. But that's always the thing. Is the email content good enough to make people excited enough to click and buy? Is the video content good enough to make people excited enough to click and subscribe or do whatever thing it is that you want them to do? So it always does, again, for me, it always comes down to that initial, to those, to the words you're actually going to use. And of course, the words are expressing something bigger than just the words alone. So that's one. Do you have any like cool ones that you know of?
You know, I tend to video as well a little bit. One of the things I often encourage people to think about is video doesn't have to be expensive and it doesn't have to be hard. You can do some very simple things that are very powerful and very interesting. Scott Stratton did one years ago that was a video he did, and I forget the name of the business. It was Allison's business, and they were making something for new moms. It was like a baby carrier or something. I don't remember what the exact product was offhand, but they did this very simple video where they asked new mothers to come out and write down on a card, on a big card, one thing that they would say to themselves while they were pregnant but before they had their child. And they would hold up the card and they just took a picture of all these women holding up the card. So you get to see the person's face who wrote it and the advice that they would give, and they just stitched all these things together into a video. And the first time I saw it, he and I were both speaking at the same conference, and he was the keynote. And so I was sitting in the audience watching this, and it just had everybody in tears. It was so awesome. But it was the simplest thing, right? It was not super high production. It wasn't crazy expensive gear and editing and all this stuff. It was a very simple kind of thing that almost anybody could have done. And the only tricky thing is I think everybody wants a video that's going to go viral, right? Everybody throws that out there all the time. And I don't know that you necessarily need a video to go viral, at least in the sense that I think of it, in order for it to have a tremendous impact on your business. And it doesn't have to be expensive or complicated.
Exactly. I mean, like the old story of, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk and how long it took for Wine TV, right? Like he did, I think it was a year of videos that he just kept doing until people finally started watching. Like when you think about making a video a week for a year and not getting any real traction, like everybody would tell you to stop doing it, right? Like, shouldn't it be easier than this? Shouldn't it already have gone viral? Shouldn't I have like a lot of viewers? How come PewDiePie has so many viewers and I don't have any viewers, right? But yeah, it's as you say, expecting it to go viral, you have to have a really emotional connection or something that gets people to feel something, whether that's like Dollar Shave Club. It was really funny, right? And it was just like cutely executed. And yours, like this emotional thing of mothers before they've had a child and then the idea of after. Those are really like deeply emotional. So if you are able to tap into something like that, brilliant. But if not, I don't think, I think aiming for virality is extremely, it's hard, right? It's like hoping to write a novel that's going to get $1 million deal. It's extremely rare to do. Far better to just like chip away at a collection of novels over time that eventually build up this audience that turn you into like Jackie Collins or something. It's like you have to choose, right? I say this as somebody who's just like now talking about it because I don't create videos, to be 100% absolutely transparent on that. So it's not my thing, but we are in the business in marketing of finding what we believe works for our audience and then executing well and sticking with it and not like just giving up 4 months later or when, you know, it starts to get really hard. So I think it's a good point that you make.
Yeah. And I think that is absolutely the key is and people that have the mindset of going for something that's going to be viral are really missing the bigger picture. And your example of Gary's Wine Library TV is spot on. Yeah. It's going to take you a while, no matter what you do, whether you're doing email or video or whatever it is, whatever you're creating, it is going to take you a while to find your audience and connect with them. They're out there, but they're not going to just come to you the first time you put up a new video or a landing page or whatever the case may be. You're going to have to stick with it for a while to build that tribe, as Seth Godin would have said.
Yeah, I think always aiming to create the content that would attract and will attract that audience, great. Always shooting high, setting that bar high, but expecting them to come is, I think, where it gets tricky. If they do, brilliant, you've got the great content for them. If they don't, well, keep producing that great content. And then, you know, when they do, they'll be like, holy crap, there's so much here. This is incredible.
Yeah. And that's when you'll start to get the comments like, wow, why didn't I find you sooner?
Yes, and exactly. You'll know that you're discovering you now.
You're tapping into it. So going back to the split testing, when people begin to do some degree of split testing, are there any just basic things that you recommend starting with? And I'm going to preface this before you answer by saying a lot of my customers, they're instantly of the impression that if I start testing the color of my buttons, it will dramatically affect my conversion rate. And I usually have to talk them off that ledge and say that's probably not the right place to begin. And it's certainly not the only thing that we need to be thinking about. But what would be your recommendation for where to begin? And let's assume for now that we are talking about some kind of a landing or sales page.
Okay. So it's a landing page. You want to A/B test because you believe there is opportunity here to get more of your hard-won traffic to convert. Okay, cool. Button color testing. I want to talk to this because there's like this section of testing that sometimes doesn't really need to be tested. But we test it anyway if we have the traffic or the lack of hypothesis that something else might work. So we have done button color tests. Absolutely, we have. We've done button size tests, button copy tests. A button is the site of conversion on your page. So no matter what, unless you've got a phone number on there and that's how you're measuring conversions, all conversions happen by clicking a button. You can't convert without clicking a button online. So knowing that, it is a huge opportunity to test, especially if you're just getting your feet wet. I wouldn't have crazy expectations that it's going to actually grow your business, but you might get some micro conversion lift out of it, right? You might find that changing a button color from something that's on brand that like fits into your brand palette to something that's very contrasting, which is why a lot of people say to do an orange button, because few brands are actually have orange in their brand color palette, but it stands out on a page and so it contrasts with what's around it. So that's good. I mean, button color tests are really like optimizing for the lizard brain rather than optimizing for something more thinky than that or how people are really moved. So there's that, but well, we've done it and it's an option. But is it where you begin when you're actually going to A/B test, when you're like, okay, we're really going to make this page much better? Where do we start? We'd say, obviously, always, always step away from the desk, step away from the boardroom table, step away from your computer, go out and listen to your prospects. That's without question. That is where the conversion optimization begins, is interviewing your customers, which I know a lot of people don't want to do. But as soon as you get on the phone or sit across the table from an actual customer that you have, a past customer, somebody who stopped paying you money, that's a good place to go and talk. And you really sit and talk with them for an hour, not 5 minutes, hey, how was it? But getting deep into some of what moves them and drives them and what they're really thinking about outside of the things that you expect they're thinking about. And not just for the sake of walking away with a list of what to say, but rather that plus using their words, right? Like actually taking the words that they said in the interview, the phrasing that they used, and using that phrasing on the page. When people are selling in real life, a lot of it is a listening experience, right? A salesperson will most likely, in most cases, in sales training that I've been involved in, sales people that I know and work with, it's about listening, right? You listen and then you repeat back what they said to you. And that using a prospect's words to convert them goes back to like forever, right? So do the same thing on your page. Don't sit there and try to think of the most clever way to rephrase a headline or wonder what a benefit might be of X feature or, you know, what's a scenario in which a person would use this tool. They'll tell you. Your prospects and customers will actually, they'll tell you those things. And all you have to do is listen, record, and then put that back on the page. And so when I'm going to start a test, when I'm going to start something that I want to test because I really want to learn first, secondly, ideally, get a conversion lift, I'll always start by interviewing customers. Secondly, doing user tests on the page to just, again, that's more listening to what people who visit the page are saying about the page. And obviously, in all of these places, you're taking it with a grain of salt. You're careful to phrase questions the right way and to listen to the right things and ignore other things like what people think they'd like and stuff like that. That's less useful. More the reactions to actual experiences that they're personally having with a page or that they've had with your product. But yeah, learning, and then of course surveys can help you get there too. But the more you learn up front, the better all of your copy will be and the better your split tests are likely to perform. And if they don't perform well, you'll at least have a reason to believe about like why they didn't perform well. So you believed that the big idea for prospects landing on a landing page, a Facebook landing page, is that they want to make more money in less time. That's what you believe they want to do, because that's what you learned from some people that they said they wanted to do. Now, if it doesn't perform well, what can you say about that? One, maybe the creative execution was wrong and they do actually want to make a lot of money faster. Or two, maybe they don't want to make a lot of money faster. Maybe there's something deeper. They want to make a lot of money faster so that they can pay off their bills. Okay, so maybe it's a matter of leading with a pay off your bills faster by making more money quickly. But as long as you're feeding a new variation with actual voice of customer data or just like the words they use, put simply, then you're more likely to at least walk away with a test that isn't just about winning, but is about learning so you can then create the next variation that's more likely to actually win.
All right. Phenomenal advice. Thank you for that very much. I think this has been a fantastic overview. This is a great place for people to get started understanding a little bit more about A/B testing, some things that they need to know that they need to be thinking about. Maybe I have to rethink my position on the whole button thing a little bit more. And I do think that's important. I just try to steer them away from starting.
Yeah, it's I hear you.
You mentioned Evan Miller. Are there any other tools that you would recommend for people, especially if they're just getting started, to go take a look at or be familiar with as they get into doing a little of this?
Those are the ones we use most because there's always going to be like generators and stuff out there, but a lot of that is like designed just to get traffic rather right. than to really provide value. For me, like Evan Miller's tools are so good and used by CROs because they're not there to do anything more than like they're not trying to paint a picture of the life you could lead by A/B testing. They're like, no, here's the harsh reality of what you need to do. And so for me, there aren't actually any other tools. Like we use the testing tools like Optimizely and VWO and those sorts of things. We do, you know, when we're trying to learn about what's going on a page, we use tools like Hotjar. So Hotjar has a lot of great stuff built into it in a single tool that you've otherwise had to get in multiple tools. So it's click tracking on a page. You can see what people are paying attention to and what they're not paying attention to. And the things that they're not paying attention to on a page can make for a good, what's called an exclusion test, which is really just taking something off the page and seeing what happens. So click tracking and heat mapping and attention mapping, that's great. And of course, part of Hotjar, Crazy Egg also does that. Hotjar has built into it polls. So like if someone is on your page and they move to exit the page, you can trigger a survey. And that survey will be something where you could ask a question like, hey, why are you leaving today, right? Or what could we have done? Or what were you trying to learn here that you didn't learn? Things like that. Other questions help you understand why people leave without doing what you want them to do. So if you can pop up that sort of quick survey, that's a great way to get insights on what's not working on a page. So Hotjar is a really good tool to use there. All sorts of different things that you can do with these tools. We're just like touching on the surface. But yeah, so Hotjar, Optimizely, or VWO. And I don't know if I mentioned anything else in there, but those are some really good starting points. Of course, I mentioned usertesting.com. That's fantastic for setting up just a couple people to your page. You can target them based on like what kind of, you know, if you're trying to sell a solution to tech marketers, then you would tell usertesting.com that you only want people who are in marketing and technology to go through and give their responses to some of the questions that you can ask about that. And then you get those videos, and those videos are always illuminating. You really only need to learn one thing from every video to have dramatically different ideas about what you might want to test on a page. So those are some of the tools that we use.
Those are some good recommendations. And for everybody listening, we will obviously have those all linked up in the show notes. Go hit the page for this, technologytranslated.fm, and look for this episode, and all the info will be there. Now, before I let you go, I want to make sure we talk about a couple of things that you guys have going on at Copy Hackers. Because for people that want to get better at their copy, which can be an important part of split testing, you guys have some great resources. So the first one I want to mention are the ebooks. You guys have a free ebook that they can get right now, but there's a series of ebooks you guys did. I bought them a long time ago, and they are – I've bought a lot of ebooks over my years. This is some of the best money I've ever spent on educational ebooks. There's a whole series, and those are still for sale on the site?
They are. We're at a point where we're wondering if we should bundle them all up into a single book and put it on Amazon. So that's why they're potentially less easy to find on the site, because we're rethinking stuff about them. But the content is still the same, and it will be the same no matter where we put it. And you can find it, I believe, in our our footer on copyhackers.com. There's a link there to get copywriting ebooks.
So go sooner than later if you want to get them now before they get all bundled up. But there's also, you can go to copyhackers.com, and on the left side, you can get one of them for free right now. Go grab it. It's really, really good stuff. The second thing I want to talk about real quickly is AirStory. Just kind of give everybody an overview of AirStory. I love this tool.
Really? That's amazing. Thank you. I love it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So AirStory, because I write a lot. Like, my day is filled with writing, and I know that there are a lot of people who are like me, right? There are people who – it's surprising how many things we write throughout the day. I know Anne Hanley wrote Everybody Writes for a reason, like the book Everybody Writes for a reason, because everybody does write when it comes down to it. So I do a lot of writing for blog posts. Of course, we have ebooks. We have all sorts of content that we put out there, and everybody in content marketing is producing the same amount of stuff that we're doing, if not a lot more. Part of our challenge when we're writing content in particular, but copy as well, is facing the blank white page. This has been my problem my entire life. I think a lot of us feel it. Our solution for that when we're teaching how to write is to do research, right? To start not in your own head, but by going out and listening. And so there's kind of this sense that when you're writing, you're actually assembling, right? Like, you've got a bunch of ideas, and it's not just about you free flowing. That's just like editorializing. We're talking about real writing that people are putting together. It's an assembly process with a lot of your notes over time, a lot of research that you collect, a lot of things that your team knows that you don't know that maybe get emailed to you, and you end up doing a lot of copying and pasting and dropping things into, let's say, a Google Doc or a Word document, and then later you go back and you move things around, again, copying and pasting this, that, and the other thing, and working around what become big documents. What we're doing with AirStory is trying to make that process a lot easier. And that means that you collect your notes, your ideas, you forward that email that has an important data point to your AirStory account, to your project, and those all become notes in AirStory. And then the real magic, the part that I I go kind of crazy for it. I'm so glad that we were able to do it, is that there's like a document side. So it's a place to write. So you've got your document view. You can write in that document view, but then you open up this slide out drawer and you can drag and drop your notes directly into your document. So if you're doing, let's say you're writing a blog post, just as an example, you're writing a blog post about 9 different ways to optimize your copy. You might have 20 notes that all are going to be part of that you've researched, that you've collected over time, and now you're ready to write the post. All you have to do is drag and drop those notes onto the page and then edit them together. So it's a really simple assembly process. It's like, I won't go on too long, but I'm very excited about it. We're in beta testing right now for it after having done some major revamping. We're really excited to get it out there. So it's cool. It's cool that you say that you like the tool.
Yeah, it very much fits the organizational style that goes on in my head when I'm trying to, write a blog post, or especially ones that are a little bit longer and more complicated. It's just a phenomenal tool. So it's in beta. Do you guys know when it's going to go GA?
Well, so we have beta group going on right now that is individuals. Then we're doing a second group that, so we'll optimize based on what those individual experiences are. And then we'll put out a beta group that's teams, because as in our interviews, so this is all informed by interviews we've done. So for example, if you're a HubSpot and you're producing a lot of content, the HubSpot team might put together a Google Doc or a Google Sheet and say like, hey guys, drop all of your ideas for X into this Google Sheet. And then you wait for that to happen. And a lot of times they like, so it's this kind of like clunkier process of collecting ideas from your team. Like, hey, does anybody have any data on our results last quarter in X, Y, and Z? So then you have to email them and wait. And in this case, yeah, so we want teams to be able to share all of their data and notes while keeping some private if they want to keep it private. But there's going to be a bigger team component to this. And so that's the next round of beta, is the team component. And then from there, we should be, after we optimize based on that, we should be ready to put it out there and see how the world feels about it this summer.
Okay. Well, we're going to keep our eyes open for that for sure. Glad to hear you guys are doing that. Okay. And then the very last thing, I promise, and I'll let you go, is the mastermind that's coming up. Copywriting, again, big part of what we're doing when we talk about testing, and you guys are running a mastermind. So just very briefly kind of tell us what that's all about.
Yeah, the mastermind is about 12 to 16. The number is up there, but it has to be groups of four with max of 16 people that identify as copywriters who will get hands-on mentorship and coaching from us. It's closing right away. Our applications actually close basically immediately. So after that, we've got, for those who weren't able to get into the mastermind or who aren't necessarily identifying as copywriters, but who want to be much better and more confident at writing copy, we have something called Copy School that's launching. And that's our one course. We used to have a couple. Now we've just got this one course that's all about writing a better homepage, writing a better landing page, writing a better sales email, those kinds of things, with I think there's 100 videos in there and all sorts of stuff. It's going to be pretty nuts. But that's coming out in May. So that's something.
Okay. So for everybody listening to this, by the time you hear this, it's going to be closed. But exactly. Go out and take a look at the course. Exactly. And then I was on the presentation you did, I think it was yesterday, answering questions. Maybe it was the day before, questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of good information in there. And if you're not a part of it this year, there isn't necessarily one scheduled again for next year, but look for something maybe in 2017. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Joanna, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun. I learned a lot of new stuff. I know all of our listeners did today. Really, really appreciate your time and thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. Thanks for listening, everyone.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next week. As always, if you have questions for Joanna or any of our other past guests, you can always hit me up on Twitter or just about everywhere online at VSEllis. And use the hashtag AskTechTrans, and I will see your questions and I will get them answered for you. And until next week, we'll talk to you then.
Technology Translated is brought to you by the Rainmaker platform, the complete website solution for content marketers and online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform.